It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And I'm looking forward to this conversation as we come to the end of the year and as we begin the program, and we'll probably end it as well. Merry Christmas to you, Cecil. Merry Christmas to you, Wes.
Absolutely. Merry Christmas to you, Lockwood.
Thank you. And to all our listeners. So what will be the topic for today?
Lockwood, let's talk about some of the, if you will, the ins and outs of real estate. Sometimes people are confused by just even that word, real estate. Appointments will say, well, tell me about your real estate. And people will begin, you know, to tell me about some of their stocks and bonds, bless their hearts. Real estate is, Lockwood, land holding in the state of North Carolina. Real estate is code language, if you will. It is terminology for a holding of an interest in land. There are many different types of holding. It can be a tenancy where you're renting the land. You certainly have an interest in real estate if you're a tenant. You have an interest in real estate if you are, you know, an owner and have a deed, which is the most common type of ownership. But real estate is a land holding. One of the other questions that comes up is that, well, you know, Mr. Collins, I have my deed, but I never got my deed to my house. I bought the lot, and I have that deed. I'm lot 10. But I never got a deed from my builder. I never got the deed to my house. And the answer to that question, Lockwood, is that there is no, quote, deed to, to your house or to your garage or to your swimming pool or to your fence. Your deed says that you own the land and that you then own all of the improvements and a wonderful word known as appurtenances there too, which basically means that as you improve the land, Lockwood, and build your home, build your garage, anything that you do to improve the property that attaches to the land, and that is part of the deed that you obtained when you bought the land.
The question then goes to the, you know, any liens against a piece of real estate that might occur as a result of those improvements. Does that influence those deeds?
Let's go to that a minute. It's kind of called the in conveyance and then the quote out conveyance in legal terminology. We lawyers talk about it like that. When you get the land, you either maybe inherited the land through a will, maybe through intestacy, maybe through a deed. And so the land came into your possession. When you then go and improve the land and take on a mortgage or borrow money from any other individual, I have this going on today, actually, where a son and daughter-in-law are lending to their mother and father $150,000 to put on a mother-in-law suite on the house, and we are granting an out conveyance back to the daughter and son for the $150,000 so that they are secured and so that they have a holding on the real property known as a lien or a mortgage. And so that would be where the owner of a property, this elderly lady, will grant an out conveyance. She will deed out of her title an interest to her daughter and son-in-law in the property, but the interest will be a mortgage, and that's many times called an out conveyance. It is also an interest in real estate, by the way. Holding a mortgage is an interest in real estate. And the terminology many times for the document that, if you will, sets forth the terms of that holding is called a deed of trust in the state of North Carolina, a deed of trust. So we already begin to see that the plot thickens here. There are in conveyances and deeds into a person who owns property. There are then out conveyances whereby they grant to another, maybe a lien, maybe they also, Lockwood, grant an easement. Maybe they grant an ingress and egress. Mm-hmm. Let's go here a minute, and then I want Wes to chime in. He handles our homeowner association files usually. And usually from a litigation perspective, there are problems, but that's why I want to bring it up. When you buy into a democracy, if you will, Lockwood, a condominium, a townhome development,
right.
A subdivision, you must be aware of the restrictions on that property, mm-hmm. and most particularly the restrictive covenants, if you will, that dictate what you can and cannot do on that property. Some restrictions on property, our listeners need to understand, are very restrictive. Your house can only be painted a certain color. You're not able to have a basketball goal out in the front driveway.
Mm-hmm.
You may not have a detached garage or outbuilding. I mean, the list is endless, depending on how the developer set forth the subdivision. And this is something you don't want to find out after the fact. You have to be, as the law says, caveat emptor. You have to be diligent before you take your title to property and buy a property to research diligently and read the restrictions that happen to be on that property. And, of course, there are then homeowner associations that are created mm-hmm. to enforce these restrictions.
As we know, where we start with regard to real property, real estate, our ownership in real estate, is, you know, the public policy is that, you know, free use of land.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you own a piece of property, then the law is basically set up, okay, this is old law and current statutory law, so that it is going to lean toward there not being any restrictions on your use of your property. Okay, it's your property. You have the right to use it as you deem fit, as you deem appropriate. There will be no restrictions on it unless there are very specific requirements followed. And, you know, as we know, these type of restrictions are things like maybe there's an ordinance that mm-hmm. restricts your use, right?
Right.
Maybe there's a zoning restriction, which could be a big ticket item because, you know, obviously certain properties owned in a certain way can only be used for certain things, and that may affect the highest and best use of the property, okay? And then kind of leading up to what Cecil was referring to would then be the restrictions on your property as a result of the property being in a planned development where there are declarations of covenants or covenants on record, okay? And notice I said on record. Because if the restriction is not recorded, the covenants are not recorded, if they're not in the courthouse, so to speak, with the register of deeds in the county where the property is situated, then they're not enforceable. Okay, so the way that normally works, Lockwood, of course, is, you know, a developer, for purposes of trying to turn a profit, wants to buy a property, develop the property, put roads in, a plat map on record, maybe identify common areas, could be tennis courts or a pool or whatever it may be, a dock, you know, these type things, and then puts on record before the first lot is sold restrictive covenants, so that there's usually the purpose of that is for uniformity, because you don't want to have, you know, a 4,000 square foot house sitting next to 800 square foot mobile home.
Right.
Right? You want uniformity.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that the uniformity is we don't want any houses that are too large, or we don't want any houses that are too small. We want there to be, obviously, or require there to be an architectural control committee that will control certain aspects of construction so as to create that uniformity. There could be restrictions on whether you can have a fence or not have a fence. There could be restrictions on the color of the house, the style of the house, which is subjective, and that's a whole other conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important, as Cecil stated, that before you buy into buy your real property, if it's subject to covenants, and sometimes you have situations where maybe there's an active homeowners association, or maybe there's not an active homeowners association, right, but there still may be covenants. So you would want your closing attorney, who is representing you as the buyer, to search title. And in the event that there are restrictive covenants on the property, you would want that closing attorney to advise you of that, so you can read those and see what your restrictions are.
That leads me to a question, I'm interrupting you, if I may, for a real quick moment here. And we're talking with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell, and that was Wes Collins a moment ago, and Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. We're talking about real estate. To your comment about the titles, searching for these easements and restrictions, is that identified with the title of the property, or would you have to go someplace else to look for that? In other words, if I buy the property and I've got the title to the property, is there, if you will, a connection to these restrictions, these easements, zoning restrictions, things of this nature? And I have, of course, I have a question about if there are changes after you purchase the property. But you mentioned the title search. Is that information visual with the title, or do you have to go to another book or another source to get this information about these additional restrictions?
Right. Well, when I think you used the word connected.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the perfect word, because the term that we use is the chain of title.
Okay.
So let's say, like, would you buy a piece of property in ABC subdivision?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the owner of ABC subdivision, the developer, was ABC Corporation. So your deed is coming from the developer to you.
Oh.
All right.
Right.
So the developer deed grantor is ABC Corporation. So then we can search the grantor index, ABC Corporation, and we will see in the chain of title that on the title would be the restrictive covenants, because it was in the name of that grantor when it was put on the property.
Okay.
So it's a connected chain of title. And when you do a closing, you will have a closing attorney. The buyer's attorney will represent you if you're buying the property. Could represent both sides, by the way, the seller and the buyer. And a title search is done, because Lockwood Phillips doesn't want to spend his hard-earned money on property and not know what he's getting, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, maybe buying property with someone else's liens on it, a mortgage,
right,
you know, tax lien, whatever it could be, whatever it may be, and not know about it.
Uh-huh.
And then you've bought those liens. And in the event that the closing attorney doesn't do a proper title search, then they may have some responsibility to you. So the closing attorney would do that title search and be able to identify,
okay,
the restrictions, the covenants, so on and so forth.
That is at the register of that's at register of deeds, that documentation.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And then the other question I had related to changes, and let me just use as an example. Let's say a zoning change. You've purchased the property for the intent of building a business on it, but in the process, somewhere along the line, there's been a zoning change. Is that easily identified? Or, again, is this a matter of just doing further research before I purchase or you purchase the property to make sure that your plans for your purchase will meet your expectations?
Well, as far as the zoning goes, that's a matter of simply meeting with or contacting the, okay, planning and zoning department effective county in many cases. Now, there can be zoning as it relates to local jurisdiction as well, like a city type thing. But normally, when you're talking about zoning, especially in this area, it's a county, primarily a county type restriction. So they have zoning maps, okay, and they can tell you, okay, this is this property is zoned, whatever, B1, Business 1, or whatever it may be. And then provide to you, or you can pull it yourself, the particular zoning ordinance, and it will provide a list of all of the allowed activities on the property. Okay, and then you can, before you buy the property, then communicate with the zoning, planning and zoning of the respective county about, hey, I'm looking at buying this property, and what I'm planning on doing there is putting in storage buildings, or whatever you want to do. How is it zoned, and is it zoned sufficiently for me able to do that without a zoning change?
Right.
And if the answer is yes, you know, after looking at the allowed uses, then great. You know where you are with regard to that. If the answer is no, then it may take you to the next question. Okay, let's look at the comprehensive plan, land use plan, for the county, and let's get some direction from planning and zoning and see what they say with regard to whether it's likely that this zoning can be changed.
Okay.
And at least you can get some direction there. Now, that direction is not always, well, it's never binding.
Right.
Because you have to go through, of course, planning board, and they have to review it, and then they give a recommendation to the county commissioners, to the respective commissioners regarding the zoning itself, and then they have to vote on it. So there's a process you have to go through before you change that zoning. So that's yet another layer that you would need to look at. Now, if you're buying a residential piece of property and there's houses all around it, well, you probably don't have to worry about that if you're planning on building a house there, you know.
Right.
But if it's normally for like some type of business use, it may be a particular type of business that you're wanting to operate on this commercial property that may be allowed or may not be allowed. So you have to be careful about that. You don't want to spend your hard or money on property with a particular idea in mind about how you're going to reach the highest and best use of the property, but then run into a governmental restriction on being able to do that.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And I do want to remind you that number, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. Wes, Cecil, the other aspect of this, and you mentioned this earlier, was the topic of easements. And, you know, we have a variety of easements that I guess are assumed. Let's take, for example, utility easements and things of this nature. Are they clearly marked also on these deeds of trust? And or if all of a sudden you discover, well, the power company does have, in fact, an easement to go through our property to, well, for electrical usage or maybe a drain pipe or some nature. I've heard stories.
Well, in a perfect world, they would be depicted clearly in the title to the property. And when I say the title to the property, again, Lockwood, what we lawyers do is that we go back and find the source. You know, was there a deed into Lockwood, or did Lockwood inherit the property? And then once we find the source, we then go forward and we look to see what kind of conveyances there are on the property, including easements, right-of-ways, anything of that nature. So in a perfect world, those things would be delineated, a buyer would know about them. But many times they aren't as clear right. as we like them to be. Mm-hmm. They also can be, if you will, created, you use the word after the fact. We have that going on right now in our office where a family has inherited a larger tract of property, and they have agreed that, if you will, the back tract goes to one member, the front tract goes to another member. They're related to each other, and the front tract is granting a right of ingress and egress mm-hmm. Over their property to the back property out, you know, so that we can come and go. Mm-hmm. And that's being done now, even though the property is already owned within this family, now that it's being divided pursuant to a survey, I might add, they needed to grant each other some ingress and egress. But easements can be tricky. They can create some dilemmas for clients, and they sometimes need legal advice with regard to an easement. No question about it. Utility easements. Things of that nature.
Well, this leads to a question of, and I say this, ownership of an easement. Let's take, for example, I own the front property. My brother owns the back property. He needs access to the back property, as you just described a moment ago, Cecil. So I've given him ingress and egress. But do I still own that property over which he's traveling? And am I paying taxes on that property over which he's traveling? And if all of a sudden I decide, you know, really, I need to use that property, I want to move the easement to the other side of my property, has that circumstance ever arisen?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you kind of went through some things that we deal with sometimes, you know, in the litigation context when easement issues become a problem. But the way to think about an easement, it's really the easement itself is superimposed upon the actual property itself.
Okay.
So if you grant to your brother this ingress and egress easement to basically a driveway easement, mm-hmm. a road easement, to go across your property, to go to and from his property, you still own the underlying property.
Okay.
His easement rights are superimposed upon the property that you own. So you still own the property. You still pay taxes on the property. You know, he's not paying taxes with regard to the property. And then as it relates to the easement rights, well, that's going to be based on the easement, the deed of conveyance, because an easement is going to be conveyed by deed, just like real property itself, the property itself. So the deed of easement, or it could be through a testamentary instrument. It could be through a trust. I leave the property to so-and-so subject to an easement. Here's where it's located. Here's what it's for. It could be through a will, those type of things. But the document itself is going to dictate the rights of the parties. Is it an ingress, egress, and regress easement, and that's it? Is it open to the public?
Mm-hmm.
Is it exclusive? Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it an easement utilities as well, or just for driving upon? Or does he have the right to put a water line down your property to his property? Utilities, power, cable, you know, these type things. And that's going to dictate what the rights are. Now,
I'm going to interrupt you very quickly and make a comment, Wes and Cecil. So I always thought an easement was just sort of, okay, I can understand the concept of overlaying that on the deed. But now you're getting right into the details, what you can do with that easement. You know, just being able, for example, to want a water line. So you're saying that if you're getting into an easement conversation or discussion with some adjoining property owners or something of this nature, you really need to get into the fine details of what you expect on approvals, these easements, then. Am I understanding that correctly?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Otherwise, you're asking for a dispute.
Wow.
And we want to avoid disputes, of course.
Right.
You know, these are the type of things that we look at. And then what are your rights as the property owner? You can't just pick up the easement and say, look, I'm going to move this to a different place because I don't like it there anymore.
Right.
Because your brother has a real property interest in your property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And you can't block his easement either. If you just, if you and your brother, since that's the parties we're talking about here, got into a dispute with regard to this,
uh-huh.
you can't park a tractor on his easement to keep him from using it. Because he has the right to ingress, egress, and regress. You can't block that. You can't frustrate that.
Wow.
He would have the right to maintain it, too, as would you.
Uh-huh.
But if he felt as though there were too many potholes and there were problems with it and you weren't maintaining it, then he would certainly have that right to reasonably maintain it as well because it needs to remain open for its intended use,
uh-huh.
ingress, egress, and regress. So I like more details rather than less details in any easement document because there's no better time than the present to set forth what our intent is with regard to this easement. It's not a good idea to be casual about it and then, you know, at a later date try mm-hmm. to fill in the gaps when the parties aren't seeing eye to eye. Let's do it when the person is buying the easement, when the person is, you know, the conversation with the person about who wants the easement so we can get those details into the document so we don't have a dispute later on.
We're talking with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell, and that was Wes just a moment ago. As we prepare to wrap this up, there's more to discussion. I'm looking forward to future conversations on this issue of real estate and purchases. This goes back to your comment earlier, Cecil, caveat emptor. That is buyer beware. So it's not just a matter of not a casual activity, as we're hearing, as Wes is explaining it, the details. It, as they say, the devil is in the details, right, Cecil?
Absolutely, Lockwood. And one more thing to add to our conversation this morning is any agreement relative to real estate has to be in writing in the state of North Carolina. So these ingress, egress easements, any kind of easement, utility easement,
mm-hmm.
any kind of mortgage or deed of trust that we talked about briefly a moment ago, anything have that touches and concerns your real estate has to be in writing. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be recorded at the Register of Deeds. That is a subject topic that we could spend the morning on mm-hmm. or maybe several mornings on. At any time, but recording is not necessarily a requirement, although I will hasten to say it's probably a wise thing to do. But the bottom line is that an oral agreement or, well, he said, she said, is just not going to be enforceable when it comes to real estate. This leads back to what Wes was saying with regard to the integrity, the importance of real estate, the way in which it is held in high regard in our country and in our state of North Carolina. Real estate there are all sorts of laws that encourage the development, if you will. I don't mean when I say development, I don't mean the buildings and condominiums. I just mean the mm-hmm. free title, the good title to real estate. Real estate is very, very important, and the laws encourage and support real estate holdings.
All right. We're talking with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell, and that was Cecil Harvell just a moment ago of Harvell and Collins. And Cecil, Wes, I'm looking forward to further conversations after the new year. I know that we're both going to be taking a quick holiday season off. I'm looking forward to further conversations. Cecil, a very
yes.
Merry Christmas to you, and Wes the same. I want to remind folks the address is, and go online to harvellandcollins.com, harvellandcollins.com, or give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050. That's Harvell and Collins. And with that, Cecil, Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you.
And Wes.
Thank you, Lockwood. Same to you.
Merry Christmas to you as well, Wes.
Thank you, Lockwood. Merry Christmas.
Let's talk legal on the Talk Station.